It's a special edition of the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The election is a month away. I'm sure you knew that already. With all the mailers, commercials, and canvassers that are out, it's hard to miss that we have contentious election campaigns. With us are some of the reporters who have been covering this election since before those canvassers ever started knocking on your doors. And I'm asking each of our guests to come up with one word to sum up this latest election cycle. So, Chris Potter is WESA's Government Accountability Editor. Chris, one word.
Crudité.
Okay. Stephen Caruso is the Capitol reporter for Spotlight PA. Stephen, one word, please.
Chaos.
Katie Meyer is the government reporter and editor for Spotlight PA. Katie, you're on. One word.
Characters.
And finally, Jonathan Tamari is the national political reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Jonathan, your one word.
Consequential.
We all went with a hard C lead. That's great. Good job, team.
Did you practice this? I don't know. Okay, folks. Let's start with money, of course, since we're hearing and seeing a lot of it spent on TV and radio commercials. At the end of September, we received campaign finance reports. One race that stood out in particular was the gubernatorial one. Democrat Josh Shapiro far outspent, out-fundraised Republican candidate Doug Mastriano. Shapiro brought in $25.4 million between early June and late September. Mastriano raised $3.1 million. Stephen, let's start with you. From your reporting and digging into the numbers, what are some of the reasons that Shapiro is bringing in so much more money? Is his campaign getting money from people with the big, deep pockets?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Josh Shapiro, just going back to 2021, he's raised $50 million in total. He spent $40 million. He's on track for a record for, if he doesn't already have it, depending on how you count the money. In spending for a gubernatorial race. So he's gotten a lot of money from out-of-state donors. It looks like about, it's evenly split. Big money donors from California, people who have given him $1 million, $2 million, people like Mike Bloomberg, the Soros family, and some others. And also unions, public and private unions, talking trade unions, SEIU, AFSCME, unions that represent state workers. So combine those things together, and that is a lot of where Shapiro's big money is coming from.
Chris Potter.
Yeah, I mean, this is why there were no Democrats running against Josh Shapiro in the spring, right? The guy is a juggernaut. And we saw that here in Pittsburgh just yesterday. He secured the endorsement of the Boilermakers, Local 154, a union that is, you know, very much pro-fracking, pro-fossil fuels, has parted ways from Democrats in the past, and yet he was able to kind of keep them in the fold. He is a national level talent here when it comes to fundraising. He is just a machine.
Mm-hmm. Katie, what does large-scale donations tell us about this year's governor's race?
Well, it tells us a couple things. I mean, Pennsylvania has no limits on how much you can give to campaigns. You can give a ton of money and it's fine. The other thing I would say is, you know, these are national level issues. And so a lot of people around the country see Pennsylvania as sort of a proxy for politics writ large. Pennsylvania is a pretty representative state. So that's one of the reasons you see all this national attention. And I'll also say, though, for Republicans, you can tell that this is not seen as a super winnable seat, or at least it would be tough to do it because Mastriano has not gotten a lot of that national level support.
Stephen?
Yeah, I think that is what Katie said there at the end. That's one of the most critical parts, too, is that Josh Shapiro is also getting a lot of money from a national, the National Democratic Group in charge of electing governors, the Democrats. Democratic Governors Association. There's a Republican counterpart to that that hasn't touched Mastriano's race. Mastriano has just not been tapping. Like, he hasn't been getting money from Jeff Yass, for instance. He's a Philadelphia super donor, richest man in PA. He funnels money into Republican causes. He backed one of Mastriano's primary challengers to the tune of, I want to say, a minimum millions of dollars. And he has run, there's maybe been some ads attacking Shapiro, but so far they're shutting off the valve on that. So it's a mix of Shapiro has access to a lot of money, but it's really obvious because none of that money is then coming in to also help Mastriano.
Okay, let's move on to issues in the gubernatorial race. One that has taken center stage in Pennsylvania is abortion. In 2019, State Senator Doug Mastriano proposed legislation to ban abortions at around 6 weeks. He said women who violated such a ban should be charged with murder. Now, he's been asked about that statement numerous times by various media outlets. I'm sure by your media outlets. Has he walked it back at all? Chris, we'll start with you.
Strangely enough, the Mastriano press team, which usually runs like a well-oiled machine, has not really responded on this. You don't hear a lot from Mastriano's folks, although I think Jenna Ellis, who's was a Trump lawyer who is working with the Mastriano campaign, kind of doubled down on it in a tweet and said something like, he said that abortion was murder and, you know, that's what it is. This is an issue that he has kind of gone back and forth about how much he wants to talk about it. And the fact is this clip did surface from a couple of years ago, but I think it really underscores just how much the abortion regime in terms of what access people have could change as a result of this election.
Jonathan.
And this is where, going back to the question we just talked about money and why so much money is coming into Shapiro, part of that is that there is such a huge impact that could come from who wins this governor's race on an issue like abortion and several other issues, including voting rights, including oversight of the 2024 presidential election. But most immediately, we know we have a Republican legislature in Harrisburg. It's likely to stay that way. And so the next governor, if it's a Governor Mastriano, could very well sign abortion restrictions. And Shapiro has said he will veto anything that attempts to restrict abortion beyond the current law in Pennsylvania. So you have a direct consequence here of who wins that governor's race. And that is, again, part of the consequences and part of the reason why people are pouring so much money in to help Shapiro on the left.
As Shapiro and Mastriano make campaign appearances, whether it's in Pittsburgh and Philly, across the state, what are the issues that they are bringing up that seem to resonate with their supporters at rallies and gatherings? Katie?
Well, for Mastriano, again, we don't have enormous amount of access to his campaign, but one of the big ones that he certainly seems to think resonates is cracking down on LGBTQ rights, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's this refrain he's got about getting trans girls out of sports. Vanishingly small number of people that this would even apply to, but it's become this representative issue for some voters. And it's hard to even say how many voters truly care about this. But very just like kind of harsh language about trans people. And then for him as well, you know, it is things like the economy and things. But with Shapiro, I think it's kind of the opposite, making sure like he expresses how much of a bulwark he would be against Mastriano and those more extreme views, especially on things like abortion.
Mm-hmm. Chris, both Shapiro and Mastriano have been in the Pittsburgh area fairly recently. What are the issues that they were focusing on?
Yeah, I mean, as Katie said, the trans issue is a big one for Mastriano when he was in town with Governor DeSantis from Florida. He talked quite a bit about that at that rally. Also complaining about, Josh Shapiro didn't do enough to prevent business shutdowns in the early days of the coronavirus pandemic, things like that. On his visits to the area, at least, you know, Shapiro's talked quite a bit about union issues. He was here with the Boilermakers yesterday. He was here with SEIU a week or two back. So it's talking a lot about those kind of labor issues that a lot of Democrats have done when they've come to Pittsburgh.
You're listening to a special edition of The Confluence. We're talking with political reporters from across the state, Jonathan Tamari, Katie Meyer, Stephen Caruso, and Chris Potter, about the upcoming election. If you're interested in learning more about the candidates, please check out WESA's voter guide. Go to wesa.fm/voter guide. Let's move on to the U.S. Senate campaign. There have been TV ads, mailers, appearances. Jonathan, has this U.S. Senate campaign been like anything we've seen in Pennsylvania before, either in terms of issues, characters, money, what?
As far as characters, not in recent memory. You know, Pennsylvania has a pretty good history of going for pretty mild personalities. Our senators are Pat Toomey and Bob Casey, Governor Tom Wolf. None of them really kind of jump off the screen when they give their speeches, which is not to say anything about their effectiveness. But as far as like, you know, their in-person campaigning, they're not lighting up rooms generally. But we have two huge personalities in this race in Fetterman and Oz, who is literally a celebrity. Fetterman is pretty much a political celebrity, maybe even more wider than that. And so even though there are also huge consequential issues at stake in the Senate race, a lot of what they've been campaigning on are their personalities. You know, is John Fetterman really the kind of everyman that he appears to be? Is Mehmet Oz just a wealthy guy from New Jersey, you know, who talks about crudité when he's talking about inflation? You know, so we haven't seen it in terms of personality. In terms of outside spending, in terms of consequence, I think it does compare to the 2016 Senate race. That was also one of the most important in the country that year. It broke what was then the record for spending. So we have seen Pennsylvania have big races like this, but maybe not with these kind of personalities at the center.
Jonathan, are we seeing voters respond to personalities? Are we seeing more enthusiasm? What's your take?
I think we've seen the celebrification of politics for a very, very long time. And you can argue about when that started and who really kind of kicked it into overdrive. But just for some examples, right? I mean, Obama was certainly a celebrity outside of politics. George W. Bush, people said he was the guy you'd rather have a beer with. You know, obviously, we just elected Donald Trump, who literally was a TV celebrity before he became president. So I think that's been happening in politics a lot. I think you sense more enthusiasm, honestly, on the Democratic side. Fetterman is something of like a folk hero for a lot of Democrats and maybe working class people. Oz has been maybe an acquired taste for a lot of Republicans based on some of the things he has said in the past. But I think for Republicans as well, if Fetterman motivates Democrats, he also does motivate a number of Republicans who don't see him as suitable and are maybe willing to vote for Oz, even if they don't love him.
Chris Potter.
Yeah, and I think part of what Jonathan's talking about, the implication is that I can't think of a race that's sort of been less about policy, to be honest with you. I mean, so much of what, you know, Fetterman's campaign, I think, has been pretty pretty clear about this, that they don't really think people vote for policy, and they're probably right about that. And so we had a campaign, especially this summer, that was just sort of dominated by these personality issues. And, you know, to the extent that you're looking for more than that, not from a given candidate, but just from how we do politics in general, I mean, that has to be a little bit disappointing.
Mm-hmm. So they're scheduled to debate October 25th, but by then some voters will have already cast their ballots by mail. Oz made an offer to debate Fetterman back in August, but Fetterman declined. Oz said, quote, "John Fetterman is either healthy and he's dodging the debates because he does not want to answer for his radical left positions, or he's too sick to participate in the debate." Jonathan, you cover national politics. From that national perspective, has John Fetterman's health issues come into play?
I think so. I mean, I think when we were talking about how over the summer, Fetterman was really kind of memeing Oz to death by making fun of his New Jersey roots and making him seem just like this ultra wealthy guy, which he is. You know, I think when that started to turn around was when Oz started bringing up the debate issue and used that as kind of an entry point to question Fetterman's health, which he had not done before that point. And I think it kind of changed the conversation. I don't know how many voters are necessarily voting up or down on whether they think Fetterman is healthy enough, but it allowed Oz to kind of take the focus off of himself and put it on to Fetterman and raise questions about him.
Katie, as you cover the election, are you hearing much from whether it's candidates or whether it's from voters about questioning Mr. Fetterman's health?
I think it's absolutely a topic that's, you know, top of mind, especially for, you know, like the political strategist types. People want to know that Fetterman's, you know, verbal, you know, acuity is getting better, that he's not missing words anymore. But I will say, you talk to voters at some of these rallies, and I, you know, other people in Pennsylvania also have health issues. And part of the like thing with Fetterman is that like he has made the stroke, or he has sought to make the stroke, a relatable thing. You know, people have these challenges. You don't necessarily have lingering effects. There are people who understand that. And so, you know, I've talked to some people who have said, you know, I had a stroke or I had a heart attack and I'm fine. And I think Fetterman's also fine. So, you know, I think it's a mixed bag. I think it depends on whether people already supported him. And this is a race where people are already pretty sure and they're already pretty divided. It was always going to be a marginal race. And so however many people are going to care about the stroke, I think it remains to be seen if it's a truly like large enough group of people to sway it. That I think is genuinely still unclear.
I believe Jonathan said earlier that Mehmet Oz was sort of an acquired taste for some Republicans. Stephen, have you seen political establishments falling in behind their candidates, their party candidates?
I think, you know, we're seeing a little bit of that. You know, I could speak closer to the governor's race, but just recently, maybe a couple weeks ago, there was a big old fundraiser just outside of Harrisburg for Doug Mastriano that featured a bunch of state senators and state representatives. You check their campaign finance, Mastriano's campaign finance form, a bunch of money came in. Not a bunch, but, like, you know, we got some checks from that. So there's always this kind of rally around the candidate that happens late in campaigns that, you know, sort of will impact that comes in late. And, you know, I also do think, you know, with Oz, I was talking to a Republican voter from York County who is a longtime Republican and only voted for a Democrat, Obama 2008. And she was even saying, yeah, I think Oz is from New Jersey and I don't know if he's the candidate for me. So, you know, I'm curious to see if, even if that talking point sort of was more of a summer thing, if it's going to really stick in voters' minds come November.
So the U.S. Senate right now is a 50-50 split. Currently, how important is it for Republicans to hold on to the seat of retiring Pat Toomey versus Dems flipping it? Chris Potter.
I mean, clearly it's crucial. I would say for me personally, I sort of regard the governor's race as being potentially more consequential for Pennsylvania. We have seen divided government in Washington for some time. So, and of course, there are other races out there that are very much up for grabs. You see in Nevada, especially, a chance for Republican pickups there. So there's a bunch of things that would, you know, a bunch of factors to consider there. When you look at the governor's race, I think, as Jonathan said earlier, it's very likely the state legislature is going to remain in Republican hands. And so the chance for real tectonic shifts in the political culture, in the law here in Pennsylvania, are just huge in that race.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan.
Yeah, I think Chris is right about the gubernatorial race having more immediate impacts on people's day-to-day lives in Pennsylvania. I will say on the Senate race, you know, it's a midterm year, so the trends are against Democrats. This is their best chance to win a seat because you have a Republican incumbent who's retired. They don't have to take out somebody who's already won statewide. So in that sense, this is Democrats' best shot at in a year when they're playing defense mostly around the country.
Stephen?
The one thing I want to add to, like, the state legislature probably won't flip, but the margins are going to get a lot tighter, particularly in the state house because of the new map. So as crazy as probably sounds to listeners, Harrisburg get even crazier when you have maybe a 2-vote margin for Republicans in the lower chamber, and you also maybe have a more conservative Republican caucus. That's something I'm looking to next year.
All right. It's a special edition of The Confluence. We preview next month's election with reporters from across the state. I want to briefly talk about the U.S. House. Democrats hold a slim margin, 222 to 213. Republicans only have to flip 5 seats to win control. Any of those 5 likely to come from Pennsylvania? A reminder, Pennsylvania has lost one House seat this time around. Chris Potter, we'll start with you.
Yeah, and one of them is one of the big ones is right here in Western Pennsylvania, the race to replace Connor Lamb, the 17th in the 17th congressional district. Lamb decided not to run again so he could campaign for Senate. Didn't go so well for him. But now we have Jeremy Schaefer, the Republican, running against Chris DeLuzio, the Democrat. If you're on the TV, if you watch anything on YouTube, you have seen a zillion ads coming in from the outside the national party groups. This is a hugely contested race in a very swing district with a pretty close balance of Republican and Democratic voters. So we will see. That is a big one happening. I know there's some out east, too.
Katie, you cover politics across the state, but particularly Harrisburg and even eastward. Any particular House races that could flip, that could help the Republicans gain control of the U.S. House? Anything on your radar?
Yeah, the two that we've been watching are Susan Wild's seat and Matt Cartwright's. Those are the closest races over here. And so, yeah, absolutely. There's space, especially in the Wild seat. It's been kind of rated as a toss-up now. I would absolutely say that you should be paying attention to those two.
In our remaining minutes, questions about integrity of our elections have been raised and debunked over the last couple of years. Has that issue come up much this time around? Jonathan, I want to start with you on that one.
It's something that I think motivates Democratic voters, but I don't think even Democrats think that at this point it's changing opinions very much. I think there's a sense that if you are outraged by, you know, January 6th, if you're outraged by the attempts to overthrow Pennsylvania's 2020 result, you're probably already mad about it. And if you're not mad about it, you're probably not going to suddenly turn around now. Where Democrats have used it is they have used it as kind of a piece of a wider narrative where they say that Republicans are too extreme because they might want to ban abortion, because they try to overthrow an election. And so they're using it as a piece of the picture, but I don't think it's like the leading message that they're going with.
Katie Meyer.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is like, there's real questions about, okay, after the election, what is going to happen? So Doug Mastriano, a person who was one of the most prominent figures in Pennsylvania, claiming that there was widespread fraud in the 2020 election. One of the like kind of through lines of his campaign, and when you talk to his supporters, has been, oh, of course there's fraud in these elections. It's kind of taken as a given among that in-group. And again, there's no basis to that. But I think there's this perception that, oh, if Doug wins, it's because he overcame all this fraud. And if he loses, it's because of the fraud. And so there's always fraud in this narrative. And I think that's something where, you know, other mainstream Republicans have sometimes gotten on board with those claims. And it's a kind of open question if they'll do it again after this election.
Less than a minute left. And so just about 10 seconds for each of you. What are you expecting over the next month? Stephen, we're going to start with you.
More money coming in. A lot more money.
Jonathan, well, that sums it up. Jonathan.
I was going to say the same, and probably a surprise about one, two, three, if not all of the candidates.
You're expecting October surprises is what you're saying?
I am.
Okay. Katie Meyer.
I'd say just it'll keep being very, you know, character driven, personality driven, not a whole lot of substance as we get to the end here.
And Chris Potter.
We got a pledge drive coming up, so I hope there's more money coming. but I would say I'll be paying special attention to the debates, not just in the Senate campaign, but in the 17th congressional district as well. This is a chance where there may actually be some real impact of a debate.
Chris Potter is WESA's government accountability editor. Stephen Caruso, Capitol reporter for Spotlight PA. Katie Meyer, government reporter and editor for Spotlight PA. And Jonathan Tamari, national political reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Thanks to all of you today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoyed this reporter roundtable, please let us know your thoughts. Feel free to email confluence@wesa.fm. Also, you can find us on Twitter at WESA Confluence. If you missed anything from today's show, want to hear past episodes, check us out, wesa.fm/confluence, or where you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Emma Furry, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.